This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow, and we're less than 90 days away from the November election. So what insight do the polls hold? North Carolina remains a bright purple target in the Electoral College, and as a result, we've received increased attention from presidential candidates. Former Vice President Joe Biden is in the lead in North Carolina with 4 percentage points over Donald Trump. That's according to CBS Battleground Tracker poll that was published on Sunday. But the memory of 2016 looms over these polls, adding some doubt into the mix. Good thing we've got the political junkie Ken Rudin with us. Hello, Ken.
Hello, Frank.
So it was around this time 4 years ago that Hillary Clinton's campaign staff was talking about picking up moderate Republicans in North Carolina. In early August, she had anywhere from like a 1 to 9 point lead over Donald Trump, depending on which polls you're looking at. Do you think the Democratic Party is tempering its optimism this time around?
Well, actually, no, and they probably should, because if you look at every newspaper article I've seen, everything on social media I've seen, it's basically like, you know, not so much the Democrats have it in the bag, but they're definitely looking at the states that Trump won narrowly in 2016, like North Carolina, like Wisconsin, like Michigan, even like Ohio, and saying that Biden is doing especially well, if not leading. But of course, there are a lot of other people who are saying, wait a second, don't forget that Hillary Clinton had a lead in some of the polls, and even though she did win nationally in 2016, she did lose these states. So we still have, as you say, 90 days to go. A lot can and a lot will happen.
Well, let's talk about some of the campaign issues. Policing, criminal codes, obviously in the national spotlight. With Joe Biden's history, crafting conservative crime laws seeming to turn off young and more progressive voters. How do you see these issues playing out over the next couple of months?
Well, that was the opposition to Joe Biden throughout the early parts of the primaries. Remember, in the beginning, it was Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren who was coming up with all these progressive issues. And Joe Biden, as you point out, was the sponsor of the 1994 criminal justice bill that you know, incarcerated a lot of, you know, African-Americans and others that the left was not happy about. And he supported the Hyde Amendment. He supported the invasion of Iraq. We remember what Kamala Harris, maybe the vice president, said about him during the debates. But since he's won the nomination, since Bernie Sanders has gotten out of it, Joe Biden has kind of shifted a little bit to the left, not as much as maybe some of the progressives would like, but on climate change, on immigration reform. Remember, Barack Obama was the deporter in chief. Joe Biden is certainly much more temperate when it comes to immigration and things like that. As far as police reform, as far as low-income housing, Joe Biden has certainly moved away from issues he's had in the past, perhaps realizing that the Democratic Party has certainly done the same. The Democratic Party of 2020 is really not much looking similar at all to what it looked like in just 4 years ago.
But what about this rift between Bernie supporters and first Hillary and now Joe Biden? I mean, what do you make of Rashida Tlaib not endorsing Biden yet? Maybe not at all. We don't know. Is this going to have an impact? And is this still hung over from 2016?
Well, you know, something I remember talking to people at the convention in 2016, Bernie Sanders people saying they could never support Hillary Clinton. I am not hearing that about Joe Biden this year. It's perhaps maybe they realize that what happened in 2016, first of all, nobody thought that Hillary Clinton was going to lose. So you could say, well, you know, I'll back Jill Stein. I'll sit out the election because it doesn't mean as much. And I think that, you know, just for so many reasons, I think Joe Biden has been willing and more eager to work with progressives than it seemed like Hillary Clinton was. There was the left would always talk about the arrogance of Hillary's campaign in 2016, whether it was true or not. The fact is, a lot of Bernie people, as much as 25%, didn't vote for her in November. I don't see that happening again this time.
What about the Biden's VP pick? Do you think that can have? I mean, I know these things historically have only had a little bump kind of at the time of the announcement. Is that going to make any difference, do you think, for the Democratic base?
Well, first of all, I think it does. I mean, we always say that it doesn't make a big deal except for Lyndon Johnson, and there's truth to that. You know, everybody loved Geraldine Ferraro, but Mondale Ferraro lost 49 states. Everybody hated, they didn't, of course, but everybody said, well, what about that Dan Quayle? He's going to be a disaster. And Bush Quayle won 40 out of 50 states. John McCain was going to lose whether he had Sarah Palin or Joe Lieberman or anybody. So ultimately, I don't think it makes a difference, but when you have Joe Biden turning 78 years old in November, nobody that old has ever been elected president, when it's very possible that the next, his running mate, should they win, of course, could be the nominee in 2024, if not sooner, I think this is a big deal.
Any speculation, you know, to sort of take a look at the possibilities now and when he might make the announcement?
Well, I've spoken to several people this week because everybody thought it was going to be this week. And it looks like it's going to be next week. My guess is still Kamala Harris because I can't imagine anybody it being anybody else. There are pluses and minuses for everybody else. Of course, Susan Rice and Karen Bass, the congresswoman from California, Val Demings, the congresswoman from Florida. Others are on the list, and of course, there'll be even more on the list. I do think it will be a woman of color. I do think it's going to be historic either way, but I think it's next week, and I still think it's going to be Kamala Harris.
New York Times put out an interesting breakdown of donors to political campaigns by zip code. Pretty hefty urban-rural divide in North Carolina, though we should say it's kind of true all over the place. But talk about North Carolina.
Well, it's true. And first of all, this is North Carolina is one of those states, and there are others on the list, like Wisconsin, Ohio, and Michigan, and others, where there are more individual Biden donors than there are Trump donors in all those states I just mentioned, including Iowa and Georgia, all went for Trump in 2016. So I think that's interesting. But it looks like the big Biden numbers, the big Biden money is coming from cities like Charlotte and Greensboro on the research triangle, whereas Trump still has his supporters. I noticed along Lake Norman, because he has one of his golf clubs in Lake Norman, there's Trump money coming out of there. But it still is pretty much the rural-urban split that we're seeing around the country. North Carolina, that's one of the reasons it's so fascinating to look at the numbers in North Carolina, because the last three winners of North Carolina, Obama in 08, Romney in 12, and Trump in 2016, none of them surpassed 51% of the vote. So it's very, very close in North Carolina, and it's a crucial pickup of electoral votes.
Well, and suburbs have long been a battleground within the battleground. How do you see the candidates trying to appeal to the suburban voters?
Well, that's interesting. I think, obviously, Trump has this view of suburbanites, that they're all white people hiding from people of color, because he has this new commercial out where you have this elderly white woman who feels that her house is being broken into, and she calls the police, and nobody's answering 911 because that dangerous socialist, Joe Biden, is defunding the police. I think he is clearly looking at the numbers, and the numbers are overwhelmingly showing that Biden with huge leads in the suburbs. The ABC News had it 52-43. NPR Marist poll had it 60-35, Biden over Trump in the suburbs. So if that holds, I mean, my goodness, Trump won the suburbs narrowly in 2016. If that holds, it's going to be good news for Biden in November. I think no Democrat has done that well in the suburbs since Lyndon Johnson in 1964. But again, between talking about it on August 7th and talking about it on November 3rd are two completely different things.
Other big money races in North Carolina are for the Senate and governor. Both Democratic candidates are boasting at the moment. The Democratic candidates boasting pretty hefty leads. Cal Cunningham, 9 points over the incumbent Republican Senator Tom Tillis. The incumbent Democratic Governor Roy Cooper with a 10-point poll lead over Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest. How do you see this stuff playing out?
Well, both of these are fascinating. Let me talk about the governor's race for 1 second, because 4 years ago, Roy Cooper beat Pat McCrory, the governor, by 0.2% of the vote. But I guess everybody is looking at governors, especially Roy Cooper, the way he has dealt with the coronavirus, the way he has closed the state earlier than most states and been more wary about opening it earlier. I think he's gotten tremendous approval for that. I think the Lieutenant Governor Forrest is trying to make the case that he's not doing the right job, but polls certainly don't show that. And Cooper's raising tons and tons of money. Even Tillis Senator Tillis has been so reeling by what's going on with the Trump's numbers and the coronavirus that even Senator Tillis is saying what a good job that Governor Rory Cooper, a Democrat, is doing. And I think that's part of one of the reasons that Cunningham also has a lead of Tillis. I think really that President Trump really did have an opportunity to either narrow the lead or even move ahead with a more assertive, more smart approach to solving the coronas rather than attacking Dr. Birx, attacking Dr. Fauci, diminishing the point of wearing a mask. And you see these tragedies of Herman Cain and others who died, who flouted these things that I don't have to wear a mask because it's a hoax. When you lose 160,000 Americans, people know it's not a hoax, and Republicans around the country are paying the price.
What does that do, just very briefly, to Dan Forrest's talking points, the Republican gubernatorial candidate, in terms of trying to get some ground under his feet as he tries to make talking points against the incumbent governor?
Well, he's not able to do that. I mean, look, when you talk about when Dan Forrest is among those who say, look, I want to open the state faster, and we've seen not only in Republican states like Florida and Georgia, but also California, Democratic states and beaches and bars and restaurants that have opened earlier, the infection rates have jumped up. So what Cooper did with the Republican convention and closing down the state and keeping it safe, I think Forrest's argument about opening it sooner is falling on deaf ears because we're just looking at rising infections and rising deaths.
Ken Rudin is the political junkie. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Frank.